Welcome to the Vancouver Tech Podcast. My name is James.
And I'm Drew.
How's it going, Drew?
It's going great. How you doing, James?
Pretty good.
All right. So there's been some interesting talk that we've been having, I guess, about the Vancouver Tech Podcast, how we run our show. Do we want to lean more toward a nonprofit? Mm-hmm. Do we want to maybe have a fiscal sponsor, which would be a nonprofit organization that would handle things for us? Or do we want to become a for-profit company? So that's something we're thinking about. We've had a lot of sponsorship offers on the table, and we'd like to really accept some of those and move forward. Mm-hmm. But we're not sure exactly at the moment how to go about it.
For me, it's like getting to zero would be great, getting back the money that we've invested in it. And there is extra hours outside of the physical recording that we do, organizing people, contacting people, setting up the schedule, setting up the notes, or editing the show. So there is like quite a bit that goes on behind the scenes that we sort of take care of, right? So...
Yeah, absolutely. I think the value proposition that with such a targeted and focused audience is also there. But anyway, regardless of that, so something that I've done recently, I was listening to a podcast. I think it was Bike Shed.
Yeah. This is your new favorite show, eh?
It's one of. I actually really like New Rustation, I would say, is maybe my favorite. But the Bike Shed's really great. Thanks, Mr. Lee from the YBR Dev Chat for cluing me onto that. But anyway, I think it was Sean Griffin or Griffith, and he was working at Thoughtbot, and he realized, you know, I really want to be spending all my time working on open source and doing that. And so he ended up changing jobs. And I think Shopify, he works at Shopify, and he spends 100% of his time maintaining Rails and Active Record. Something like that, and gets paid for it. And I thought, crazy. Wow, this is really good. But it also gave me an idea.
Oh yeah,
yeah. And so I thought, you know, I'm spending a lot of time with community stuff. So we've got, and so are you, James. But we have meetups, we have HackerNest, we have the Vancouver Tech Podcast.
Yeah.
And you know, Code for Canada is something I'd really like to spend a lot more
weekend,
time on this
last
year.
Last weekend there.
And so I started reaching out to a couple places, and I negotiated 20% of my working time to be spent on community stuff. And so I'll be starting with a new place next week.
Savvy.
Yeah, I'll tell you all about it next week.
Cool, cool. All right, you ready for meetups?
Absolutely. Meetups around town. So you had a pretty interesting week in meetups. We started out, I guess, on Monday, the Git meetup. And I thought, you know, I think I gave a kind of a hope for a call to action for everybody to sign up to that and ask some really difficult questions.
Yeah,
and
Adam.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody did, but, I know that nobody did. Other than Adam, I was the only one that showed up, but I made Adam actually show up, and it was pretty fun.
Cool. So did you learn anything, or did you ask him anything specific that you can talk about?
Yeah, absolutely. So that was one of the things that I did at a couple of meetups that I went to is that I posted in the comments. So I posted what I wanted to talk about and then kind of like a follow-up. So this case, I actually had three different topics that I really wanted to go over. One was, I think we've talked about it before, but like the idea of rebasing squashing history versus not. And a lot of people are like, I don't want to see your, you know, in my history.
Yeah.
Adam's always like, why are you doing that? Just use some blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, so what does that look like? So I got to the bottom of that, and I realized that basically doing a git log dash p dash m and then dash dash first dash parent, it pretty much removes all of those things. You can also show no merges if you want. So there's no real quote-unquote benefit to...
Right. Squashing?
Well, I mean, I guess it depends on your workflow, but you can easily filter that stuff out.
Yeah, the default git log is like kind of messy.
Well, it shows everything, and maybe you want that. And a lot of people, I posted an interesting Hacker News thread about this. It's from a few years ago, but it was really interesting. A lot of people, they say, you know, I'm working on a team, and I've got some, I've got professional expert engineers, and I want to see if they've gone down a rabbit hole, where they went, what they failed with, and if I'm thinking about doing the same thing. So I want to be able to view that history.
Yeah.
I want to keep it there, even if it is quote unquote garbage commits.
Sure. Yeah. Happens to me all the time with developing packages. Cause unless I push a new, unless I iterate on that package, I can't pull the latest version because it uses the SHA-1 mm-hmm. number. So unless it's changed, it doesn't, it says there's no new version. Yeah. So I have like tiny little commits. Uh-huh. So my log gets really fat. It's like fix line 7
yeah,
or
yeah.
it's like fix missing semicolon. It's uh-huh. like, oh, I mean, there's probably a better way to go around it, but.
So here's an yeah. interesting thing. When you, when you're merging from a feature branch, mm-hmm. Are you fast forwarding onto master or onto your integration branch, or are you doing no fast forward? Because that can make a difference as well.
Is it default to no
it
fast
defaults
forward?
To fast forward.
I am doing fast forward. I leave it to the default.
Okay, so yeah. what that does is it basically, if you fast forward your commit mm-hmm. onto that branch, then mm-hmm. it looks like it was just developed directly on that branch. Whereas if you have no fast forward, then you'll be able to separate the branches out a little bit easier.
Yeah, I get the I am doing fast forward because when I merge it in, it just says it adds a new commit saying merged whatever branch, and then I can't see it. It's like, yeah, I can delete it if I wanted to or keep moving forward.
Yeah, so I think that was something like no fast forward. I personally like to have as a default, but I mean, it's up to you. Yeah. So then there was another one, feature toggles versus feature branches. Mm-hmm. And I had a little bit of a discussion with some people in the YVR dev chat about this. And it seemed like we were talking about different things. And
that seems like the feature toggle is a feature behind a flag, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like enabling an environment variable or something like that.
Well, that's the way that the conversation went.
Yeah.
But if you look at a lot of the things that I linked anyway, and a lot mm-hmm. of the discussion now, and this is maybe from a few years ago.
Yeah.
But about slowly putting unfinished code that really doesn't do anything yet, and having it toggled off into your production,
quote unquote,
code.
Behind a flag. That right, some people turn on and turn off.
And that was really the discussion that I was looking at, like feature toggle versus feature branching. And I thought that was pretty interesting. So I had a couple of links there and wanted to get more of a discussion going on that and kind of get some definitive examples. But we didn't have time. We just kind of went through the rebasing and squashing stuff and went through some stuff with that. And then the other one was just Git workflows. So Adam Dimitrik, he came up with this branch per feature 4 or 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. He blogged about it and it got some pretty interesting responses. I don't know how relevant that is to today's discussion where,
I think so. I've contributed to a couple projects that have feature branches or even like bug fix branches, like bug fix / missing spelling error, bug fix /
Right. I don't feel like these days you need to make an argument for doing that is what I meant, right?
Right.
I mean, back in, 6, 7, 8 years ago, people were still like, why should we use Git?
Also, Git's gotten better. The tool has gotten better. Mm-hmm. So there's new things coming in all the time.
Yeah. But anyway, so I thought it was a pretty interesting meetup. Mm-hmm. And I think going with having some actionables or a desired takeaway can be pretty fun and rewarding.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Cool. So that's...
That was Monday.
Yeah, that was Monday.
What about you? Did you get to anything on Monday?
I went to nothing this last week, but I do kind of have somewhat of an announcement. Mm-hmm. I started TAing at Red Academy.
Oh, interesting.
So Monday was my first day.
And what are you TAing?
The front-end development course. So I did a JavaScript thing. We were talking about arrays and objects.
Awesome. That sounds really fun.
Yeah, all the downsides of undefined, NaN, null, false, and you're like, oh, wait. Oh, don't forget to put this.
Nice.
Need a var here. This is a global variable.
So what days are you TAing there?
I'm starting in April, but I have my first, I think it's Monday and Wednesday is the front-end dev course. And then it's just like 6 hours a week or something like that. So
I think I heard you over talking with somebody or heard you talking with somebody else. And one of the defining factors, I guess, about Red Academy and why you chose to TA there was they actually have a dedicated sort of teacher's course for the TAs.
So you have to put in, there's two, I got the email saying, hey, these are the training courses that I need to take as a TA because there's sort of a note about learning for adults, like how that's different from learning as a teenager or maybe a young adult.
Mm-hmm.
There's like that side of things. And they've hired a person that used to teach at, I think, UBC.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And so he teaches the teachers so that there can be better teachers. So I thought that was really interesting, not just from a perspective of, oh, that makes their TAs better, but also like, oh, that'll make me better. Mm-hmm. That'll make me better as a person, as a teacher, as a TA. So I was like, oh, that's cool. And I'll get paid to do that, paid to learn, paid to become better. So
well, that does sound pretty cool. So I went out to something as well on Tuesday. There was the BC Dev Exchange workshop, and that was pretty interesting. I think they kept the invites down to about 20, and it was held at the Robson Square UBC area. And so this was, if you're unfamiliar with the BC Dev Exchange, we'll post a link. But this is basically our developer counterpart in government.
Yes.
Been working to open source different data sets and trying to work with us to to bring that involvement between the public and the private sector. And that was a lot of fun. There's a follow-up, I think, this week or next, right, this week on Wednesday afternoon. And then also on Wednesday, I went out to the VanBug or the BSD meetup. And that was pretty interesting. So that was, it had advertised a talk on OpenStack and BSD certification. And I think the person who was supposed to bring the projector for the talk wasn't there. And also there was no Wi-Fi.
Oh no.
So those two things were somewhat in the way, but we had some good discussion anyway. And I posted a couple of links. I posted actually in the meetup group. Kind of what the key takeaways were.
Sure.
And it was cool because there was Emmett, who is involved with the OpenStack documentation team.
Okay.
Kind of pointed out that if currently, if you look at OpenStack documentation, there are guides for getting up and running with several Linux flavors.
Yeah.
But there's nothing right now for any BSD.
And okay.
He's very interested in FreeBSD and getting documentation going.
So he was trying to call out to people that maybe are in the BSD community to try to contribute?
Yeah, or even people that are interested in getting more involved.
Sure.
Maybe more in the OpenStack community that are interested in getting into the FreeBSD community or vice versa. Because, you know, developing and maintaining documents for that type of system is a pretty big task.
I know a lot of people have challenges pumping up their resume with open source contributions.
Yeah.
Documentation is like the easiest, most laziest way to add to pad your resume, essentially, by saying I contributed to this, and it's really important to have good documentation.
So that's a really, like, it's the easiest, most laziest way is a very interesting and somewhat negative way to describe it. You might say, on the other hand, documentation is one of those things a lot of people let slide. That is maybe one of the most detrimental things to let slide for a project. If you have good documentation, it's inviting, it brings more users.
Yeah.
And it's also a really good way, I think, as you're learning something to get things documented, right?
And my easiest, laziest way, I mean that I don't think I've ever seen anyone turn down a PR that says, add documentation. It's like, oh, thank you. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
They're so happy to have someone contribute docs. And it's so nice. Even when I see like spelling errors or stuff, I'll just fix it. Like it's a 2-second PR, especially if you're using GitHub. You can just like literally click edit. It automatically forks it, automatically opens the file, automatically opens it in editor. Mm-hmm. And you just change the word and then you're done. And all of a sudden, bam, you have a commit in that project.
Yeah. So definitely really keeping documentation updated is, but it's a big community effort. So there was a call to action for people who are interested in that to form a group and to kind of dedicate themselves to working on that. On the other hand, there was also talk about BSD certification. So I also posted some links. It looks like there are two main certificates. One is the associate, which is maybe a series of multiple choice tests, and the other is a BSD professional certificate, which has a practicum or somewhere where you would set up various environments.
Cool.
And so those, if people are interested in joining that group and being a part of it, it was a big call to action for that.
Cool.
Yeah.
All
right. That was all I made it out to last week.
So you went to enough stuff for both of us, it sounds like.
Yeah, I hope so. Oh, I totally forgot to mention, on Monday as well, I went to the Pi Ladies Talk Night.
Right. How was that?
It was actually really good. So there were some great speakers. It was very well organized. And the food was great as well.
Nice.
So it was pretty interesting. I think my favorite talk that really got me jazzed up and kind of interested in machine learning was a talk on machine learning.
Oh, cool.
And it was, the talk itself was also inherently interesting, I think, but more than that, the presenter was so enthusiastic and passionate about the subject that I guess that energy came through. And so
contagious energy. Absolutely. Yeah, that's always nice to have
a speaker like that. Yeah.
Cool. All right. You ready for this week?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So Monday, March 14th.
All right. So again, we've got the Exploring Git. And again, for everybody who's interested in doing that,
yeah.
I would say post some things up there. If you have thoughts on, you know, anything Git related,
yeah.
let's get some conversation going.
Yeah, and that's at the Mooses Down Under, 8:30 West Pender at 5:30.
At 5:30 p.m. That's right. Yeah.
Cool. That's all we have for Monday, but how about Tuesday?
Yeah, I was actually kind of surprised. There wasn't a whole lot other than that going on Monday. So that's pretty cool. Tuesday, we have a ton of things happening.
Yeah.
So we had the Open Coffee, and that's 8 a.m., Nelson the Seagull.
Mm-hmm. And that one's actually a sort of, they sort of pen it as startup drinks in the morning. Mm-hmm. So if you're not really maybe into that sort of, if you're maybe you don't drink or something like that, or you're not comfortable in bars or something like that, you can definitely check out Open Coffee. It's a nice, really friendly group of people that meet super
focused?
Early. Not necessarily, just sort of a meetup.
I've noticed you say that every time. Do they actually say that? We're startup drinks in the morning?
Sort of. Yeah, they actually say that in their description.
Okay,
yeah.
Interesting. Because I think we had also talked before about, you know, I tend to avoid groups that have startup in their name.
Yeah.
I see that as a kind of, you know, maybe not not
really
my
path. The culture can be a little bit...
Not that I don't like startups, that I just don't particularly like a lot of meetups that have startup. Although... Startup drinks, I did go to that one time, and it was great.
The one time I did go to Open Coffee, I did talk to a guy about his startup. Mm-hmm. That was an e-commerce startup.
Okay.
But then I talked to the other guy there, and he just worked in a different company. So it wasn't necessarily a startup, but he was partly the organizer. So it's cool to chat with these people.
Interesting, yeah. So then also on Tuesday, but in the evening from 6 p.m.,
mm-hmm.
there's the VanTug, Vancouver Technology User Group Meetup. That's over at BCTIA at the Innovation Hub.
Mm, great so, Northern Way.
That's right. So it's a presentation, and the title is DevOps, mm-hmm. Modern Approach to Software Delivery by MVP Ashish Prasad. And so that looks to me like this is going to be a presentation on DevOps and what that means.
It says, the description says, be ready to evolve your traditional application lifecycle management.
Yeah,
so,
and there is an Eventbrite sign up, so make sure to
double sign up.
It does look like it is a free event, but it's always nice to get your tickets and not just show up because, you know, if everybody just shows up, they might not know how much things to prepare.
That's just rude.
Yeah,
just
that
rude.
Might be pretty interesting. It doesn't look like the type of thing that's a workshop where you'd have to bring a laptop or a computer, but kind of go for the conversation and for the presentation.
All right. And the next one is the Vancouver Functional Programmers Meetup.
Yeah. And that's over at Unbounce. That's the fourth floor, 401 West Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of right across the street from the library beside the post office.
Yeah. And they're actually going to have a talk. The talk is to be scheduled at the moment. But if you want to do a talk on that on something, you should definitely get in touch with them.
Yeah, I've been out to this. I've actually only made it out one time, and they had some really good talks. I thought it was very well organized and well presented. I'd love to go out to more of them. Sometimes it's hard to choose which one to go to because there's so much happening.
Oh, yeah, for sure. All right, and our next one, virtual reality game developers.
Yeah, I thought this was kind of neat. So I've also noticed there seems to be a very big a difference of culture between game programmers and the rest of the software community.
Sure, yeah.
I don't know. Have you noticed that, James?
Yeah, I when I was in college, I talked to my teacher and saying, hey, should I take a game development program or should I take a straight up web development program? Would game development make me a better programmer? Would web development make me a different? There is a difference. The difference to me was that, or at least that my teacher told me was, your resume is going to be different. It's like, okay. And as I sort of moved on from there, I really noticed that there's a lot of them have like different skills, like developing for hardware or developing for very strict environments makes you a different type of developer, I think, whereas web is very loose. There's not too many rules that you can't break. Whereas game developer things like you have limited memory in that computer, you have limited memory in that Game Boy.
But there's a lot of other development other than web development that I was kind of talking about.
Okay.
And it seems like it's game developers and then the rest of developers.
Yeah. So how do you feel? What do you feel the difference is?
I don't know. It seems to me, and I haven't been, I guess I haven't been to enough games meetups that it seems somewhat different. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it is.
Maybe
a
higher level of stress or something.
Yeah, maybe. Programming AIs and little AIs and working with graphics and stuff like that, I think can be a little bit like it's not the funnest.
But there's a lot of AI programming outside and machine learning and things like that outside of games.
Sure. I mean, for games specifically, they're working on things like hit detection and all these weird sort of things that are that I guess the QA process is completely different too. That must be insane. Working with game developers and having people test your code, and there's so many working parts, like it seems really overwhelming, especially looking at it from the outside. But yeah, this one's about virtual reality, so sort of about game development. Not necessarily game development. VR can be used in a lot of different cases.
That's true, yeah. Virtual tours for real estate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, just as an example.
I have a friend actually that's a startup that does like virtual tours of different buildings and stuff like that. But yeah.
Interesting.
We don't know the location yet. We're not part of the group.
So the location's only shown to members.
Yeah.
But we know that that is at 7 p.m. On Tuesday. Go ahead and sign up to that and let us know how it was if you do attend it. So then we've got this other one here, the kids code in
Joyous.
The childhood of their life.
Sure.
Right? And so this is over at Lighthouse Labs, 350 128 West Hastings.
Mm.
And this looks really interesting. If you're interested in what sort of opportunities there are to volunteer and help kids get into coding, then this might be a place for you.
Awesome.
Okay, and that's our Tuesday. So then Wednesday, we have the Learn Data Science, and this looks like a pretty fun group. Have you been out to any of these?
No, I haven't. Not yet, actually.
Not
I'm
yet.
Wondering, maybe I'll take a look at the book and see if there's something that I can maybe, if I don't understand, or maybe there's something that I kind of want more info on.
Mm-hmm.
The book that they're going through, or it's more of a document, really, A Neural Algorithm of Artistic Style. So it's about
a
16-page.
Like
yeah, it's like a 16-page PDF mm-hmm. that they want to cover.
Yeah, so I think that's it does say advanced. It's a data science reading group and a neural algorithm of artistic style.
Yeah.
So that seems pretty interesting. I definitely like to read that paper. And then it looks like they have a couple hours to kind of sit down and talk about it.
Actually, Selena introduced me to Charles, who is the organizer of this at HackerNest.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, Charles is pretty cool. Seen him around a few times, and he was actually at the at Pi Ladies as well.
Oh, nice. Cool. Yeah. So he's one of the organizers of this, and he's really into data science and machine learning and all this crazy stuff. That's really cool.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. All right, and that's SFU, 515 West Hastings at 6 p.m. Then we also have the Vancouver Pluralsight Study Group.
Yeah.
And they've got a pretty interesting topic, I think.
Yeah.
What do you think, James?
Building applications with React and Flux.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's going to be cool.
Definitely. So that's over at PNI Digital Media, 100 425 Carroll Street. This is on the first floor. And that's from 5:30 to 6:30 p.m.
Yeah, they're actually talking about getting started with React Router, and Flux, mm-hmm. all these different methodologies and tools that work together. And also they're talking about a little bit of the modern front-end development workflow, which includes like Node and Browserify and Gulp and all this other fun stuff.
Yeah. So would you bring your laptop to that?
Probably.
Yeah,
I definitely would.
Most definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially if you're going through things like how to set up these tools. Mm-hmm. It can be a little bit of a dance between, okay, install this, then set up this. And if you're trying to memorize that, you might get stuck. So definitely bring your laptop if you're looking to get those tools set up, and there'll probably be someone there to help you if you get stuck.
Yeah, for sure. And then we've got the Vancouver Azure has a meetup as well at 6 p.m. It's over at Microsoft 11th floor, 1100, 1111 Georgia Street.
Yeah, cool.
And that's on Project Oxford,
yeah.
Which is a machine learning.
Yeah, I think that's their answer to Google's, what's the Google one? Flow or something, the one they just released.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, they released their machine learning tools or whatever to that improves their search and Google Voice, and they use it all over the Google products. They open source that, and I think Microsoft's like, oh, we should probably release ours as well. I actually saw an article.
That voice.
Yeah, probably. They're like, well, they're getting into open source quite a bit, right? They mm-hmm. keep releasing tons of stuff. This is the new Microsoft, where they're open source and actually friendly to these open source communities, as well as friendly to Linux and Unix and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But I saw an article about the Microsoft open source stuff, and they said that their machine learning stuff was 10 years ahead of what was in the open source community.
Mm-hmm.
So, which is insane if you think about 10 years in the lifetime of a computer.
Mm-hmm.
So it'd definitely be cool to check this out. This is close to me, so I think I'm definitely going to check this one out for sure.
Yeah, it does seem like a really interesting meetup. I'd love to get to know more about Project Oxford
mm-hmm.
And maybe do some reading on it beforehand. and then go and see what it is all about. I think that for me, I'm quite interested in some of the language understanding libraries.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. And the next one is our Product Tank meetup. Ooh. That's at the BCTIA Innovation Hub.
Yeah.
And
that's so also... have you been over to the BCTIA Innovation Hub at all?
No, I know that you went a couple weeks ago, right?
Yeah, I've been a couple of times out there. It's a pretty nice place. I find it, I think it's unfortunate that it's like outside the downtown core.
Yeah.
It is. It's great on a nice day to get, you know, a half hour walk from the downtown core.
Nice day, meaning light rain.
Pace.
But
no, it's great. And so this is Product Tank. It's soft skills for product professionals. Now, I'm not sure what to expect from this. And I kind of thought of this as a, I'm a product manager type meetup to talk about some soft skills.
Yeah, but, so it looks like there's two different talks, one from Rob Mahaffey and Brian Young. Mm-hmm. And Rob is the director of product marketing development operations at Douglas Lighting Controls, which is actually, I guess, owned by Panasonic, which is pretty cool. And Brian is the senior product manager at EDP Software. So they'll be presenting soft skills for product professionals. So that seems pretty cool. If you're in the product environment, definitely check that out.
Yeah, and then there's the Vancouver Couchbase meetup.
Yeah, Couchbase. That's a database, right?
I believe so. Yeah, Couchbase and Apache Spark.
Cool.
Is what they're going to be talking about. So this is at 7 p.m. Wednesday, March 16th. It says on the meetup page, needs a location. So if you're interested in Couchbase and Apache Spark and you have a location, looks like there's currently 9 signed up. Maybe anticipate about 20 people. Maybe reach out to them and let them know that you have a location.
Yeah.
So it should be pretty cool. Couchbase and Apache Spark. I've been hearing a lot about Spark these days.
Yeah.
And I'd like to make it out to some meetups that are talking about that.
Yeah, that one's they want to do it at 7 o'clock p.m. So if you have a meetup, like Drew said, you can always reach out and say, hey, I have a meetup or a meetup space at 7. You can steal it. Cool. Let's jump to Thursday.
All right, Thursday. So we've got Code and Coffee over at Mobify, number 300. Is that the whole third floor at 948 Home
Street? I believe so, yeah. It's a pretty awesome place. I go to this one all the time just because it's so much fun. And I know that I'm becoming a Code and Coffee veteran because I know two of the people that are speaking out of the three people that are speaking. So, yeah, it's pretty cool.
Cool. So that's 6:30 on Thursday evening. I'm going to try and make an effort to go out to that as well. We've got TechStarter's Mentor Night, which also might be worth going to. That's over at Lighthouse Labs, 300 128 West Hastings at 6 p.m. Mm-hmm. So the TechStarter's Mentor Night, have you been to any of those?
I don't believe so. I've been to a couple Lighthouse Labs meetups, but I don't think I've been to the TechStarters one.
So this is one I would say if you're going either as a mentor or as somebody who's interested in learning code and kind of getting stuck along the way, make sure to bring your laptop so you could kind of sit with somebody and actually write out some code. It should be pretty fun. I think it's supposed to be a kind of a meeting space between those interested in getting into software and those who are already.
It's basically your chance to like take advantage of the TAs and the teaching staff at Lighthouse to help you with your work or help you with your code and help you learn.
Makes sense. Okay. And so actually I forgot to ask, what about for Code and Coffee? Should I bring my laptop?
You could actually. Sometimes there's talks or like discussion periods going on while there's a learning sort of section going on. So when I did my presentation at Code and Coffee, I did Chrome apps and extensions, like how to make a Chrome app, why make a Chrome app, why
did
make
you bring
a Chrome
your laptop
extension.
To do that?
Absolutely, because I had to present. But I also taught like a mini course for 10 minutes on like I made a scaffold of an extension and I sent it to I showed everyone how to edit it and how to customize it for any site that they wanted to use it on. So the scaffold was for Craigslist. It would just inject a style sheet. So I was able to remove their style sheet and show like no styles and inject my own style sheet and show custom styles. So that workflow or that type of functionality inside of an extension is exactly what you want to try to do. So it was a great starting point for these people to sort of say like, I needed to know how an extension works. I want to inject style sheets or scripts or whatever. So it was a good starting point for them.
That sounds pretty good. And he said it was only 10 minutes. So that's 10 minutes that might save you an hour or two trying to figure it out.
It took me an hour to get this 10 minutes down. So take advantage of all these people's hard work.
Definitely. And then there's the Society for Canadian Women in Science and Technology. They're having a meetup. I think it's a social meetup at the Railway Pub, 579 Dunsmuir Street from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m.
Yeah, they definitely have a lot of stuff going on. Their speaker is Liz, and she's actually the director of corporate relations at the Student Biotechnology Network.
Yeah, and so that should be pretty fun. I don't think you need to bring your laptop to that, as it looks like more of kind of a networking event for particularly aimed at Canadian women in science and technology.
Cool.
And then we got Friday. So there's a couple of interesting things happening. The Creative Coding Relay. So what's this all about, James?
Yeah, I sort of found this last minute just looking at what was going on in Vancouver on Friday, because we didn't have anything for Friday, and this one popped up. It's it's for the meetup, the Vancouver Creative Technology Group, and the meetup is Creative Coding Relay. And so what it sounds like is that they have a projector that shows you a snippet of code or a type of drawing, and then you have to change the code to match the drawing. And you only get a few minutes, 5 minutes to modify your code, and then the next person in line has to take over, and they show a new slide, and then you have to copy that image to your code as well. So they're using a programming language called Processing, which lets you draw art or make sounds. It's a very artistic language, and it's used for drawings and sketches and
art. This group, they say they're totally open to people of all levels.
Yeah.
You know, if you're quite comfortable, there'll be some experts very familiar with processing, but at the same time, if you're even new to programming, this would still be something to go out to. And it's there will be some drinks there, but you're more than welcome to bring your own beer and share with other people.
Cool.
So it seems like it should be a pretty fun meetup. And that's over at the Center for Digital Media, 685 Great Northern Way, which is pretty close to the next meetup we have on Friday, which is the BCTIA Grub in the Hub.
Cool.
Yeah. So that is over at the BCTIA Innovation Hub, which is 887 Great Northern Way.
Yeah.
That's in the afternoon, though. So that's from 12 to 1. You've got to register for it. Registration is free, but make sure to click the link and register. Mm-hmm. And so this is all about Canada's anti-spam law and practicing safe email.
Yeah.
So if you are doing something that involves email, and you just want to go out and speak with some other people, or you want to have a lunch gathering and listen to the technology lawyer Paul Armitage give a talk about this, then it should be a great time.
Yeah, if you don't know, Canada recently, I think early last year, changed the laws for spam. So there's legal repercussions for cold emails that are unsolicited and stuff.
Right.
So it's definitely good to know.
I thought that was about 5 or 6 years ago.
I think it's now is the time where you have to implement it. You were given a certain amount of time, and now is when you have to you have to obey the law now. Before it was like, this is coming, and now it's here.
So kind of like a deprecation warning.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it was. We're depreciating your bad practices. change your life.
And so that's 11:45. Pizza is served, and then the presentation begins at noon. Definitely something to make it out for. I think I wouldn't worry too much about bringing your laptop, but make sure you have something to take notes with.
Yeah. All right. And that's meetups around town.
All right. And we're here with Parveen Kaler. Thanks for being on the Vancouver Tech Podcast.
Hello, gentlemen.
Hi.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. This is our first, straight referral from a past guest, vouching for someone on the show. So you know Gillian quite well, right?
I know Gillian.
Yeah, past guest Gillian. Well. Yeah, she recommended that you come on the show and talk about all things Swift and all things game development.
Ah, yes, game development. This is the part of the show where we have a trigger warning.
Oh, yeah?
yeah. If you've ever worked in video games, we may use the word crunch. We may use the word death march.
Yeah.
So if that's going to cause some mental issues, maybe you...
Okay, so that's actually kind of interesting. You've gone through a transition. I guess you started out in games development or spent some time in games development, and then you transitioned into mobile development, maybe a couple of steps in between. And you actually have on your LinkedIn profile, I'm a recovering video game programmer. Now, James and I were talking a little bit earlier during the meetups around town section about how there seems to be quite a difference somehow in culture, I guess, between the game development community and the rest of the development community. Mm. Maybe you can speak a little bit to this.
Yeah, for sure. I think there's a strong web development community here in Vancouver, specifically JavaScript and even Ruby and Rails and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little bit siloed from the video game industry.
Right.
Part of the reason is probably because the largest studio in town, EA, is way out in Burnaby. And who wants to go to Burnaby?
Right.
And
sorry, people from Burnaby.
Yeah, I actually floated a couple of meetups.
It's it's like a strip mall in the middle of nowhere, and it's not sure. accessible, and they're not very open to the rest of the community. But yeah, like the largest employer is way over there.
Yeah,
and just the style of development is different. Yeah. So
Microsoft has or had a game studio here for a while. I'm not sure.
They did. Mm-hmm. You are correct. There was some Kinect stuff. Mm-hmm. I think they already did some Kinect titles, I believe, when the Kinect first came out.
Oh, okay.
Because they have two offices here, right? There's the one on Robson, and then there's the one on West Georgia. So there's obviously a lot of stuff
going on.
Well,
is the one on West Georgia, by that, do you mean the one above Nordstrom?
Yeah, it's hard to say because they just opened that office. I'm not sure.
Because there's another one, too.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
But I always see the signs, and I can never tell exactly where it is.
Yeah, there's another one in, like, the crosstown, like, Yelltown area.
Yeah.
Right. That's over on Beatty.
Yeah, over
on Beatty. I think the game one, they used to have, like, something over by Maine.
That was Radical Entertainment, I think you're thinking of. Okay. Famous for Simpsons Hit and Run, probably was the biggest title that came out of that studio.
Awesome. And there's a couple in Gastown, too, right? Thinking Ape, I think is one
Thinking
of
Ape is one of the newer social games. They do social games and mobile games. I think Eastside Games, good friend Josh Nielsen that I work with way back in the day at Relic Entertainment, he runs Eastside Games.
Maybe tell us a little bit about gaming culture and the gaming industry, being a developer in games, and what this means. I'm a recovering video game programmer.
I've shipped titles for, PC, Xbox, the Sony PS3, and the Sony PSP, and developing for those platforms is unlike developing for the browser or, like, even, like, mobile apps. Mm-hmm. Or because performance, like, really matters. You have to hit 60 frames a second. Mm-hmm. And the teams are really, really large for AAA titles because there is a lot of content.
What do you mean by really, really large?
The largest team that I worked on was about 120.
Whoa. That's pretty big.
That's big.
And then there was like QA outside of the studio, also doing QA for like internationalization, different languages.
Yeah, that sounds like a huge
when you're doing a PC title, you have 100 PCs and you have to make sure every single video card works.
Wow.
Does the AMD processor, the Intel processor, do they work well?
We were chatting about differences. That was one of the things I mentioned, hardware. Also, it's like, here's the RAM that you have. In a PSP, it's like, here's the RAM that you have. Don't use it all up or you're screwed. Like, it'll crash or it won't work or it'll run slow. There's all these crazy things to worry about, right? So maybe you could talk about how you sort of got into this space. So
the full kind of like, let's do LinkedIn in 30 seconds. So I did a computing science degree at SFU, graduated in about 2002. Mm-hmm. This was right after the stock market crash in 9/11. Yeah. So probably sat on my ass for about 6 months. Then I picked up a job at a place. We did 3D like CAD software.
Cool.
So did that for about 2 years. And then,
did you have any experience with Tickle?
Tickle and TK? Mm-hmm. No.
Okay. Just thought I'd throw that in there. Please continue.
That's odd that you bring that up.
Every second person that comes in has Tickle experience for some reason. Yeah, it's crazy.
It's odd that you bring... That's a very Unix-y language from
But it came about as the tool command language specifically for CAD, didn't it? Or AutoCAD?
I recall it being used for like GUIs on Linux like in like the late 90s or something. After that, video games for about, 4 years or something. Mm-hmm. So worked on some PC titles, worked on some Xbox titles, and Sony PS3 title. And I was working on a Sony PSP title when I was sitting at my desk. And you turn on the internet, and Steve Jobs is... Mm-hmm. This is a podcast that I used to listen to at that time. It was 2007, 2008. Mm-hmm. I think it was Mac Break Weekly with Leo Laporte.
Yeah.
So this was the days where Apple didn't like live stream their events. Mm-hmm. So I'm sitting there. Some dude with a camera is just like streaming. And like the sound is terrible.
Yeah.
And,
but the slides are still gorgeous, right?
The slides were gorgeous.
Yeah.
And, he comes on stage. Today we're announcing three devices.
Yeah.
It's a phone, an internet communicator, and messaging or something like that. I forget what the three actual details are like.
Sure.
And I'm sitting here at my desk with a Sony PSP. I'm like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. One of these things is the future and one of these things is the past.
Yeah,
I think it's kind of obvious which one's the past. So it was about, I think when the App Store came out in about 2008 is when I quit my job at that place, and and I've been consulting.
So you kind of saw this iPhone, and you're like, all right, that's what I'm doing from now on.
Yes.
See a games industry, iPhone all the way.
Yes.
That's really interesting. That's some good insight. I mean...
That sounds like Sylvain, who was on the podcast last episode or a couple episodes ago. He was talking about how when he first saw the first iPhone come out, he's like, wow, that's a game changer. And he basically made a new company, you know, that later
that
week.
I remember when I saw it thinking, well, I'm going to get one of those.
Yeah. Consumer driven.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do for the next few years of my career. And that's I think, really good insight. But it, in hindsight... It looks like a very obvious decision and something easy to have made. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that?
I think it was...
Would you think so?
It wasn't the general outlook that this was going to be a game changer. I think I had like a little bit of a, like a special view into it because I was so close to the PSP.
Right.
I'm like, oh, okay, this is like this, but way different. Yeah. And like... a real OS, like the Sony PSP does not have an operating system, right? It's like it's like a bootloader, and like you just load the game. It's like and you write like low level to like like DRAM to like output sound or whatever, right? So like you're writing everything. Wow. You're writing like all the you have access to all the drivers.
When the iPhone came out, like it was super expensive. Yep. It was a phone from a company that doesn't make phones. Yep. It was crazy hardware that, you know, a phone that doesn't make even devices, really. They all they made was computers, I guess.
Well, they also...
They made the iPod.
Yeah, the iPod, which was hugely successful.
Yes.
So, I guess it was, like, the iPod with that could make phone calls, which is strange. People thought they didn't need that.
I don't think the iPods at the time had the full screen like
just
the iPhone did.
I think the 3-inch video may have just
come out. Or they came out concurrently around the same time.
Yeah, that sounds familiar.
And so it was, but I felt like it was, you know, well, you can get a device now that does all of this stuff and has a phone as well or doesn't. And then you have two devices that you have to carry now. Because by that point, iPods had already become... you know, a pretty much a must-have for any technophile, for sure.
Yeah.
I'd say.
Yes, for sure. I think I carried an iPod as well as, I think my phone previous to the iPhone was the Motorola Razr.
Nice.
You were cool.
I remember that.
The classic.
Aluminum. That was really cool.
I remember those only because every once in a while, a friend of mine would be like, man, someone stole my Razr. They got stolen all the time. People lost them.
They're
dropped
tiny,
them.
They're tiny, They would fit in your change pocket.
I was in Korea, and I remember I spent like $700 or $800 on this Samsung phone. It was a flip phone, but it kind of turned to the side and looked like a little palm video recorder.
Nice.
And it took the worst video ever, but it was awesome.
Yeah, I had one that was a flip phone, but it had the antenna that was basically a weapon because it was like a solid piece of plastic. But I was one of the cool kids that had, you know, iPhones and flip phones and razors and stuff like that. But I definitely remember all the kids that I was jealous of that had those cool phones.
All right, so what was the transition like? You saw this come out and you're like, I'm gonna hop on this.
It was in 2008. I think it was like crazy times. There was like the original App Store Gold Rush, and so that was a super interesting time.
Yeah.
But people were also still kind of trying to figure it out, like what are apps and like mobile really going to look like? And I think we did a lot of like terrible mistakes, many terrible mistakes. Like I go back and look at some of the apps that came out way back then. Like, whoa!
Like the fart apps and the gold app. Remember the gold
apps and like,
But this was one of the first times where all of a sudden, you know, this touch interface is really the focus.
Yeah, for sure. Multi-touch was huge.
Yeah. So how did you face some of the challenges of just even the UI for that?
Yeah.
I think to begin with, stuff like gesture recognizers came a whole lot later. The original apps, most of the interaction was scrolling. Like the rubber banding effect was awesome. Yeah. Like people would just like rubber band all the time, right? it was rubber, like scroll, pinch to zoom, and that's about it.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
There wasn't a ton of like, we were just figuring it out, right?
Sure.
Like,
Did you have Objective-C experience before switching?
No, I had a ton of video games, so a ton of C++ experience. C#, we did a lot of the tools in C#.
Yeah.
A lot of the scripting in video games is in a language called Lua.
So I play with Lua quite a bit. It's
Lua is fantastic.
Yeah, it's cool.
Some WoW add-ons.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how most people know it.
A great language.
Yeah, it's awesome.
So picking up Objective-C, it was a little bit of a stretch because the object model in Objective-C is a little bit different than C++. C++ is more strongly typed, whereas Objective-C is more dynamic.
And the syntax is quite a bit different, right?
I had written Lisp in university, so like I was used to the parentheses, where in like Objective-C you have the brackets, so like it's like whatever. It's just like one delimiter versus another one. So I kind of got it. So it did look odd, and it's Objective-C at that point was kind of a crufty language because it had been originally invented at Next.
Right. I think Stallman maybe did like the second iteration of Objective-C or something.
I know
like
that they did OpenStep and some of the GNU compiler stuff to get it over to, I forget what the desktop was, but there was OpenStep and they were trying to do some desktop on top of Linux or something, or the herd kernel, I guess.
Oh, right.
This is like the 80s. But so Next was acquired by Apple in 1997 or something, and really not a ton of updates to the language happened between 97 and 2007-ish or so.
Wow.
But like Objective-C today is actually a pretty good language. Like Objective-C 2.0, really modernized. They added a concept called blocks to C. So like
is that like memory blocks that expire?
No, like closures. So similar to like Ruby has blocks, JavaScript has closures.
Lua has closures too.
Yeah, Lua has closures as well.
Like you started day one, you could already just make apps, or how'd
you go
from...
That's something I wanted to chime in on. I read one of your posts on LinkedIn, Learn Swift Now, and so this is about Swift, but you gave a pretty interesting argument here, you know, that when stuff was first coming out, you know, why not read some of the notes on things that are being released, the early releases. Sure, it's going through some change, but why hold off when you can do, you know, 30 minutes here, 30 minutes there, kind of learn in 30-minute chunks, and then instead of waiting for a complete spec to be out and kind of learning it all at once, what was your approach to see?
So I follow the Swift Evolution mailing list, and there are features being added to the language all the time.
Right.
And I think it's... we're at the point in the language where it's malleable, and you can actually, like a regular person can like show up to the mailing list and give comments on a feature. It's like, hey, I see this. I know this other particular language. I like this feature out of this particular language. And Apple has been allowing like contributors from outside of Apple to like submit like pull requests for the language. They're on GitHub. Wow. This is surprising coming from a company like Apple.
I know. They're like almost right up there with the American government.
And unlike Objective-C, you can cross-compile it, right? Like Objective-C is still locked to the Apple ecosystem a little bit, right? There are open alternatives to Cocoa, right?
So Cocoa is the framework. Yeah. Objective-C is the language.
Yeah.
Like any other language, Objective-C, you can write it for other platforms.
Yeah.
And you can't really make apps because that's
the licensing.
Cocoa,
all that stuff
is AppKit is specific to Mac OS X, and UIKit is specific to the iOS. Mm-hmm. So like you're not going to use any of the UIKit or AppKit stuff, which is the Cocoa frameworks. But language is the language. You could use it to write
little
like
command
Linux
line
apps
and,
or whatever.
Yeah, tiny things. So. But Swift, I know I was actually looking. Something popped up on my GitHub a couple days ago, which was someone made a web framework in Swift, and it compiles to OS X and Ubuntu.
Yes.
So that's pretty sweet, because I never seen anything like that around in the community.
IBM is doing some, like, IBM, of all people.
Right.
Like, crazy! Apple and IBM are working together. So IBM is doing some, like, great stuff with Swift on Linux for the web. So there's a whole bunch of little micro frameworks that are coming out that look a whole lot like Sinatra.
Yeah.
I don't know if you used Sinatra with Ruby.
Yeah,
so it's like a,
yeah,
so
you say that's crazy that IBM and Apple would be doing things, but until the Intel chips, weren't the Motorola IBM chips?
There was Motorola, then they switched to PowerPC by IBM. So they went from Motorola to IBM to Intel, I think.
Something like that. Yeah. So, but I mean, it's not too uncommon for IBM to have their tentacles and everything.
Yeah.
So I think they're one of the biggest contributors to open source as well.
Yeah, I think they do a lot of Linux stuff.
Yes.
And obviously servers are like massive in their company, right?
Yeah,
Sure.
Yeah.
So what are the cool things that you're looking forward to in terms of Swift, iOS, all this sort of stuff that's coming out? WWDC is when?
WWDC is generally in June. I don't think
it's coming up soon.
Been announced yet. I've been following the Swift mailing lists. Mm-hmm. The next big version of Swift is kind of slated for that. A lot of it is cleanup mm-hmm. of features in the language, mm-hmm. Making it work better with Core Foundation. Core Foundation is like the lower level like libraries, like yeah. the standard library. Mm-hmm. A lot of cleanup with respect to that. The next big push in the language is going to be generics. Mm. So they're trying to figure out so templates and like stuff like that.
Cool.
So I was over at Best Buy the other day, and I walked by the Apple section, and I was talking to one of the people there, and he showed me an app for learning Swift. And this was cool. kind of the first time I ever really looked at Swift.
Yeah.
I was like, wow, it looks actually very, very readable and pretty yeah. straightforward. So I'm thinking, you know what? I might want to spend not my whole career, you know, not a career shift yet, but maybe a half hour or, you know, a couple hours a week and kind of look at things and play around with it. Are there things like Swift meetups? Where are some good resources that I might go to?
Yeah, so I am firing up the Swift meetup again. We'll have a meetup probably the first week of April. First week of April is when we're kind of targeting it. I run a weekly newsletter at swiftnews.co if you sign up to that. Monday morning, first thing, you'll get like a whole bunch of links of articles around the web about Swift. And
awesome.
And generally update on meetups there.
Awesome. So here's a question. I don't know if it laugh at me if you want. I don't have an iPhone. I do have a Mac.
Yeah.
And I'm interested in doing some Swift development. How far should I go before I say, you know what, maybe I should go buy an iPad or something?
You know what? You're fine. Download Xcode from the Mac App Store. It's like one click. Start with Playgrounds. Playgrounds is kind of like a... what's a great way to describe Playgrounds? Playgrounds is like a REPL, but a visual REPL.
Okay.
So, like, as you type, it updates.
That's awesome.
I don't know if you follow the light table stuff by Brett Victor.
Yeah,
yeah it's very light table-like.
Oh,
so, fire up a Playground and just, like, start typing away. And the Playgrounds
have...
are fine. You can get a lot of stuff done just in the simulator. If you
so
don't have
definitely
a,
not yeah. a bad place to start
yeah.
out.
Yeah,
and then,
for sure.
You know, if I get serious about it, I'll probably
yeah.
get a device.
And even if you don't have a Mac mm-hmm. and you have a Linux machine, start writing a web app. And, like, I think one of the more popular frameworks for Swift right now is called Zeewo.
Uh-huh.
Very Sinatra-like.
Oh,
write a little...
We don't have to use Swift for iOS-specific apps?
Yeah, correct.
It's cross-compiling.
I
you
didn't
can
know.
Run
yeah.
on any
yeah.
OS. Is there any projects that you have in the community that you're working on or anything like that? I
know. Projects in the community. I'm looking forward to on Wednesday. I think it's Wearable Wednesday.
Okay,
so
yeah.
a few friends, my friends from Human, are putting that on, I guess, and my friends at Proxy, I think,
yeah.
are going to be displaying their hardware.
Is that
their
Proxy
wearable.
Bands?
Yeah, they're Proxy
oh,
bands.
Okay, yeah.
So yeah, I think so. That's what I'm looking forward to this week.
Awesome.
I think we
yeah.
might be talking to someone and try and get someone from Proxy
yeah.
Out
cool.
here as well. So tell us a little bit about your consultancy. So you've got Smartful Studios Inc. Is that your
yeah? So I've been doing that since 2008.
Mm-hmm.
I generally jump back and forth between consulting and startups, and I'm in the consulting phase right now.
Mm-hmm.
One large client that I have. This is my like general work there, and I help a bunch of smaller clients. I do a thing called like CTO as a service, so
okay.
I'll help,
oh, cool.
them, help them hire,
yeah,
review all pull requests on GitHub, do the weekly meeting, and show up to stand up every morning.
So if I'm
yeah.
someone, I've got a business background, I've got an idea, I really want to get this app out there, then maybe a CTO for hire might be a little better than trying
yeah.
to find a CTO for marriage before I figure things out.
Yeah, so a lot of, it's a more like budget-friendly option for some people.
Right.
And it is, if they have a large team of like more junior developers and they're trying to like ramp up the team,
mm-hmm.
That's a good use case as well.
Mm-hmm.
And man, I'm like so overbooked. Like,
yeah.
so
that's
it's like,
demand.
If I can help
mm-hmm.
like somebody, like that's kind of the way that I can like structure helping somebody.
What kind of projects are you particularly passionate about? Is there something where you're like, you know, I love developing this sort of stuff and that sort of stuff, maybe not so much?
I think I'm interested in all like the newer stuff coming out. So I'm wearing an Apple Watch.
Yeah.
So like wearables are super interesting to me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The Apple TV is super interesting to me from a home automation
yeah.
Viewpoint.
Right.
So I just like put in Lux lights, you know, the Philips.
Yeah, yeah.
No idea.
So like
yeah.
I could be like,
got a Chromecast.
Yeah, so do I. Cool.
Here's my watch. Let's try this. Hey Siri, turn on the lights.
For those of you listening, there's literally no audio coming out of there.
So I guess
and she's saying, let me work on that. Okay. And this is going to totally freak out Gillian because all the lights in the apartment are going to... Yeah. But yes, yeah. So like it's there's some like cool, interesting stuff happening.
Siri, enable disco mode.
Yes.
Yeah, so, that's pretty cool. Yeah. So how do you find the Apple Watch as someone that's sort of
it's
in
okay.
this space? Yeah.
It's okay. Yeah. So the original iPhone was revolutionary, but like people also forget it was slow.
Yeah.
It was a little bit underpowered. And like the Apple Watch is also a little bit slow and a little bit underpowered. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. Better, I find a lot of people like either you have a valid use case for it or maybe not. And if you do, then it's something you might not be able to live without. And if you don't, maybe not. I find for me, and I think a lot of developers in general, like a touch device is not going to take place of our laptops because we need a keyboard. We need to be typing when we're doing the code stuff. And I mean, I've got my mobile phone, but then for other people, they're like, you know what? I've got my iPad. I don't need anything else.
I have a friend that only has an iPad, no computer, no
laptop. Really? Wow.
He has his phone and an iPad and that's it.
Yeah.
And I'm surprised he's able to do all the things he does. Then again, he's not in like the tech industry. He does a lot of construction and stuff like that. So for him, it was like, iPad mini. He has iMessage on there. He can now send text messages through iMessage, so he can even talk, like switch devices, and it doesn't make a difference.
For sure. Yeah. So, like, my MacBook Pro is my Xcode machine, but my iPad Pro, like, email, I read on it.
Reddit browser.
So, like Kindle, it's my Slack machine, so I run Slack on that. Like, my to-do list is there. So it's actually, like, I like, just keep the laptop just for Xcode and, like web browsing and everything, everything else kind of.
My iPad is like my, I live in an apartment that has a loft, so my iPad is like my upstairs computer.
Your upstairs computer.
I never bring my laptop upstairs.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's how I use it. And I use it all the time. I use it every day.
Yeah.
I use my iPad. So it's pretty cool.
I think people have kind of like slept on the iPad. Like, give it a second look. It's actually gotten really good now. So I have the iPad Pro with the keyboard and the pencil, and it's actually a pretty good computer now.
How do you feel about people saying that that tablets have stalled? Because, you know, the sales are going down. I have an iPad 4 with the Lightning adapter, the one that has the Lightning adapter. I don't see a reason to upgrade. It's not slow. It doesn't. The features are via software. The hardware is kind of where it's at. It's fully baked. I don't really need anything else. I'm wondering, is our tablets going to start to decline, or does everyone just stop buying them because they already have them?
I don't think tablets will ever be as huge as mobile phones because everyone will have a mobile phone, multiple mobile phones even maybe in their pocket.
Sure.
And not necessarily everyone will have an iPad.
Which have gotten bigger as well.
Yeah.
So you might have like one phone per person, but one iPad per family or something.
Right.
So like naturally there's going to be less iPads out there. But it is a great computer now. So
Well, I think that pretty much covers most of what we wanted to talk about. Is there anything you want to say? You're bringing the Swift meetup back. Are you doing that by yourself?
I'm going to try to partner with the Clojure meetup as well. So want to talk more functional programming. So
that sounds really interesting.
So functional programming is a big thing in Swift. So try to like partner with a whole bunch of other people doing functional programming.
You know, there is a functional programming meetup.
Yeah.
And that's coming up, I think, pretty soon. And they haven't announced all their speakers. If you're interested in giving a presentation, you might want to reach out to
them.
Cool.
Yeah. And for Smartful Studios, do you hire contractors? Do you have employees? Are you looking for anyone right now to help you out with that sort of stuff? You said you're super busy.
How do I say this? Running an agency sucks. Like, I do mostly my consulting out of there. Like, I don't want to like run an agency.
Yeah.
Like, if you are out there and you have an agency, stop it. Like, you're just murdering yourself.
There's someone across the room from you that has an agency.
Yes, it's a terrible business. It's like
it's tough. Service businesses are tough.
So are you looking to work with anyone or work for anyone or looking for actively seeking any new contracts at the moment?
Probably working on my own apps in the future. So always looking
product
for
guys.
Great, cool. Looking for great designers to like collaborate with. Mm-hmm. Like that.
Are you on the YVR Dev Slack?
I am there.
If people want to reach you, what would your username be?
Would be my last name, Kaler, K-A-L-E-R.
And you're on Twitter as well, right?
I am on Twitter, same username.
Yeah, and you have a, you also have a website where you also blog as well?
ParveenKaler.com.
Cool. So you're all over the place. Yes. And the Swift meetup. Yeah. Or the Swift.
Go to swiftnews.co to get the newsletter every Monday morning in your email box.
All right. Well, if I don't see it earlier, Parveen, thank you very much for being on the show and look forward to seeing you at the Swift meetup.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks for listening to another episode of
VancouverTechPodcast.ca. That's our site. You can actually email us, too, at show@VancouverTechPodcast.ca.
Or find us in the YVR Dev Slack. I'm at Drew.
I'm at James.
We're almost always online.
You can actually get an invite to YVR Dev Slack if you haven't got one already at yvrdev.herokuapp.com.
See you there.
Bye.